and a warm welcome to the Maven People Change podcast. This is the place to find thoughtful and heartfelt conversations about leadership and organisation development. Each episode is created with our listeners in mind, so if you have a suggestion for a topic you'd like to hear us talk about, please do get in touch with us. Maven are thought leaders in the area of leadership and organisation development and have a wealth of experience in this area. We have a thriving community and we offer regular free events. You can find out more details via our website, maven.co.uk. If you enjoy listening to this podcast, please do leave us a review on your favourite platform to help us grow our audience. Thanks so much for being here and we hope you enjoy listening. In today's episode, we are joined by Ash Thomas, formerly Head of Leadership and Talent Development at the British Heart Foundation, but now a brand new Principal Consultant here at Maven. To give you the chance to get to know our Ash a little bit better, I thought I would revisit our mini-series, Why OD? As I found last year when I asked our consultants how they came to work in this thing that we call organisation development, their own unique paths into the field revealed some of their individuality and what makes them them, and Ash did not disappoint. This is a great listen. Enjoy. Okay, so I'm here today with Ash Thomas, who is going to be joining Maven soon. So, hi, Ash. Do you want to start by telling us a little bit about yourself, kind of where you currently work, and a little bit about you, and then.
So I currently work, Claire, at the British Heart Foundation as the Head of Leadership and Talent Development. And previously, some of my career was spent in charities, private sector, public sector, doing people change development, leadership development, all sorts of cultural activities. And I'm probably one of those people who's sort of falling into this idea of what an organizational development practitioner looks like. So I'm definitely on the cusp of emerging into OD, I think, and bringing the things that I can bring to that practice and wanting to see how I can use that to help grow organizations and help find humanity in organizations and amplify that. I think that's the common thing throughout all of my career, actually. And I've only learned that this year.
Okay.
I didn't realize it, but I now think that's what it's been.
Okay. So take us back. So do you start out in sort of people and sort of HR side of things, or was it more learning and development, or kind of,
I actually started in headhunting. So I started after first degree in psychology was headhunting. And then after a short career in headhunting, I did a master's in organizational psychology. So that sort of business psychology, change and leadership development, that's where I started to get interested in what happens within organizations. So the thing about headhunting was this was really fun and exciting and probably made me more money than I've had for the rest of my career. But what was missing was actually being in the organization and actually seeing how organizations function and how people interact with organizations, what their experiences are and what's a good organization and a healthy organization and a good culture and a healthy culture versus one which isn't quite so good or quite so healthy. So I think I really felt that I was missing being part of making a good organization and a good culture. So that's sort of where I started, I think. And my first really important job was when I worked at Stonewall after my master's. And I worked on authentic leadership development programs at Ashridge. I was working with clients on developing inclusive cultures and organizational equity. And that's where I started getting really interested in sort of the idea of good leadership and good organizational systems and organizational dynamics, I suppose, was the other thing. All the invisible stuff, politics and power and all of these things. So I started getting really interested in all of that.
Sounds like you kind of discovered that fairly early on in your career then, because a lot of people, so I recorded one of these with Carolyn Parker, who's joining us as well. She was saying when she kind of discovered OD, it was like, oh, that puts a name to all those things that I've been noticing, or, you know, like you say, the culture and power dynamics. The sort of, it tends, to be, people I've spoken to before, is that you kind of realize that that's what you're kind of paying attention to, and then, oh, it's got this name, and it's this, then it's got a field of practice. But it sounds like, yeah, it was quite early on that you kind of discovered you're interested in it, and to do the master's in organizational psychology.
That's a really good observation, because you've just, I suppose, before I started studying psychology and started thinking about organizations, firstly, my mum was a psychiatric nurse, and she used to take me on her community psychiatric nursing rounds. So often on the weekend, she'd say, we have to pop in to go and see this person because they might not be very well. And I think I started getting really interested in psychology at that point, and understanding difference in people, and that was really interesting. And I think from then also, just in my family, there was, you know, there was there was a series of things in my childhood which were sort of family traumas, and my role in my family has always been almost the mediator, observer, the person who, in essence, since about the age of eight, giving almost therapeutic spaces to people. And it's really interesting that you pick up on that, because I think that's where it all comes from. And even I was talking to somebody yesterday about when I was in a Catholic school between the age of 9 and 13, and one of the nuns said to me, you would make a really, really good priest, but I don't think you'll be a priest. And I think, again, now 30 years later, I sort of understand what she means. It is whether it's a one-to-one conversation, or whether it's a room full of 400 people, convening space and finding connection and finding intimacy and being able to communicate something useful and sometimes universal is as much about what you're saying and what you're thinking, but how you're providing that environment. And that comes directly from some of those really early childhood experiences, some of those, yeah, noticing your family dynamics and your family system and what role you have to play in that. And also on top of that, being mixed race, gay, and in a society where you're always looking maybe from the outside at things, you're never quite one thing or the other. So I like to talk about the fact that my favorite word in the whole of the English language is hinterlands, because it's this feeling of being between one place or one space and another, and always being in between. So my whole life has always been a process of always being in between and wanting to become something else. It's almost this ongoing questioning and inquiry. On that, I now have language like inquiry and self-reflection and noticing and attention that I've grown up with. I think I've grown up with all of these things, and I think that's the nice thing about how we might describe organizational development, is at the center of it for me is that everybody can be an instrument in developing and changing and improving themselves, and actually, therefore, the organizations and the systems they're in. So I think it's also intimately connected. So it's very exciting for me to be able to talk about it, and I'm so excited that it might actually be my job. I can't quite believe
I think it
it.
is. Yeah, and I think that's something with, and that, thank you, that was beautiful, by the way. And gave us such a picture of you and how you've come into this, and I think you're not alone in that. You know, I think Martin talked about, you know, having divorced parents and being that mediator and wanting, kind of creating that space. And yeah, I think it's, there's some common threads there, I think, with other people that we've had this conversation with. And like you said, some of your childhood experiences, I guess, you know, creating that kind of emotional intelligence early on, and recognizing and picking up on things that other children might not have been exposed to or been aware of. And
Well, I wonder if that's part of what organizational development offers, is the ability to notice things that maybe aren't always on the surface. And maybe it's a comfort with being able to sort of go beneath what might be happening and what might be more observable. So whether that's that relationship's not working very well, but being comfortable enough to try and explore or figure out what's actually happening that makes that relationship not work brilliantly. And I think I had a conversation with my chief people officer, Kerry, a couple of days ago, and she reminded me that about 5 years ago, I think it was like HR Magazine, there's an article where I'm talking about how I think all organizations need therapy. And I think it's that it's, there is a relationship between some of those therapeutic practices and organizations and systems. And I think really, really good organizations that are able to deal with the stuff that's uncomfortable are really, they're really progressive. They're bold. They're actually healthier. They are, I think, less prone to sort of toxic things that get in everyone's way. And I think they're more able to produce happier people who do good work and are healthier for it. And I think there is definitely this relationship between, it isn't therapy, but it might borrow some practices and principles, which is, can you hold spaces? Can you surface things that ordinarily don't get talked about, but actually are fundamental to being able to make breakthroughs or progress or possibilities? I think that's the nice thing. Oh God, this is so interesting, Claire, because because it's a blend, it's the sort of like the blend of art and science. There is a multidisciplinary thing about organizational development, which is that it can draw from lots and lots of different things. So it can draw from empirical studies about what organizations do, but it can also borrow anything from, I've often thought that the difference between organizational development and HR as a discipline, there's lots in common. I think it's like organizational development is like modern art because it's looking at relationships and abstracts and things that might not already be there in front of you, but if you can find your own relationship with it and make your own sense of it. Whereas I think HR can be almost like the classics and the sort of the old masters, which is it's sort of literally there in front of you. And some people have a preference for the old masters because it's a bit more familiar and you kind of can get taught the rules. I think organizational development can be a bit more experimental and a little bit more abstract, and that's why some people fall in love with it. And I think that's also why some people struggle with it, because some people would go to the Tate Britain because it's really familiar, and some people go to the Tate Modern because it's a little bit more.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, like, you used the word, tangibles and intangibles earlier. And I think that's another way, is that because I have to remind myself, because I'm still learning about what organization development is, especially as a non-practitioner. So sometimes we can, our topics or our articles can creep into, oh, that's a bit more HR than OD. And yeah, and I sort of think of, HR as being kind of policies and procedures and tangible, concrete, more sort of stuff. And that the OD is the more, is like the, like you say, the intangible is the invisible stuff that you can't see, but you kind of know is there, and it's kind of getting to those bits. Yeah.
So how would you describe your definition of OD? So
Oh.
you said you're not a practitioner, but I don't
Oh,
necessarily
Ash,
believe
we were getting on so well. You're not supposed to ask
I
me the
don't
questions.
necessarily believe
Yeah.
you.
You're not supposed to ask me the questions. Well, it's interesting because I have previously said, that it's a bit like therapy in the workplace. But then I heard James saying he doesn't like people saying that. I was like, well, I better not say that anymore. It's hard. I think Carolyn Parker explained well, which is that she hasn't perfected her elevator pitch yet. And I think it's very hard to succinctly explain it. If you've got time to sort of sit and give examples. And so a really quick reference one that I might use with friends is just check-ins, and just saying that, we check in with each other as human beings before we get to the work. So, connection before content, as we say. So just recognizing that we're human beings, and that we might be bringing stuff in, we might have had a bad school run or something that is going on at home, and what you're arriving with and how that might affect you, and then how your colleagues can therefore best work with you, and recognizing you don't have to put on a corporate mask when you go into work and pretend that everything's fine and be a bit of a robot. It's that actually we are human beings, and bringing that element into the workplace. So yeah, that's kind of a quick reference point that I use to kind of try and give a hint of it. And then I might say things like that we do team dynamics and leadership, and kind of, encouraging better relationships in the workplace to and ultimately to make organizations more efficient and effective, that it's that that's what it's, in service of. That's the end point, is it's not just because it's nice for everyone to be happy. It's because ultimately it'll be more profitable if it's a private sector, or they're more successful in whatever their, the company's objective is.
It's nice because everyone has their own take on it. So I think that's part of the challenge with it, is that each individual might have their own take on it, but there are probably some commonalities, aren't there? And I think one thing I've learned definitely this year, one thing that's been really great for me working with Maven, is I think I've boiled it down for myself in terms of what I can't talk about what is organizational development and lay claim to having the answer to that. But for me, I think I've worked out that it's finding the basic humanity in every situation and finding ways to amplify that for the benefit of the wider system that you're working in. And I think that's almost, if I have to boil down what my version of OD is for me, I think it's that. It's finding the basic humanity, finding ways to amplify that, because it's good for the people who are interacting and relating with each other. It's good for the organization as a whole. It's a sustainable way to grow. It's a good, healthy way to sort of build people's capacity to change themselves and change the organization and improve things that are happening in the organization. I think it gives people basic humanity to and courage and encouragement also, and some tools to give themselves permission to influence, change, make the things better that they want to make better. I think it's got this relationship between the individual and the whole system that other forms of development don't have. So it works at multiple levels in a sort of incremental way to shift things and change things. And you can come at that from lots and lots of different ways. And I think the beauty of it is that it's very genuine and responsive to actually what's going on. It's not, I think sometimes it might be easier to define it by what it isn't. It's not a toolbox or a box of tricks that creates magic solutions that fall away. The aim of it is to do the very opposite. It's to build capacity so that you can sustain the changes that are important responsibly in context that are beneficial to whatever is in service of the organization and its people and its stakeholders. So it's, I don't know if you can elevator pitch it.
No.
It's a philosophy behind it, isn't it? It's a set of integrated practices and philosophies that are more, they're just that it's a broader set of practices, I think.
Yeah, and I think that's a really interesting way of putting it, because as when you come on the kind of the consultant side, that's what I find fascinating with the consultants when we're working with clients, is it can be so different, and they respond to where they're at, is an expression we use quite a lot, in terms of what they've got going on for them. What's their situation? What do they need? What do they want? What do they respond well to? And we talk about the perceived weirdness index in terms of, some of. And like you say, in terms of that toolbox of, and it being a mixture of science and art, and you'll find that in some organizations they might lean right into that kind of, the more therapeutic side and the more kind of out there and artful and side. But then other organizations you might be like, oh, actually they need something that's a bit more staid and tested, not as out there and not as perceived weird as some of our other tools. And it's fascinating that they've got this, they've got that stuff in their armory. They've got the models and the tools and the theory, and then it's kind of picking what suits who.
That's going to be really exciting for me, because I don't come with all the tools. I think I come with a perspective and maybe an affinity for some of it. And I'm really excited about being able to learn from my colleagues about actually in practice, what are the processes that over time have grown to be, well, these are the tools that work really well in these situations. Here's how you work with them. So that's part of the attraction for me, is that there's so much that I don't know about this. I think I've got a feeling about it and a hunch about what I might do with it, but I'm not, that's the exciting bit, is the opportunity to grow. And I suppose that's, you touched on something which I think is quite helpful, which is there's yeah, you said that some organizations might respond really well to like the artful side of things, and others might need I guess more like what's the provenance of this and what's the tool that's going to solve this? And I think it's always finding the right balance to ensure that you're doing the right work with the right intention that the client, I suppose, understands enough of, but it doesn't, but I suspect in this work there's more risk, I suppose, if someone goes, I just don't really get it, and therefore, and it might take longer to get there. So I think there's definitely that phrase of like trust the process
I was just
is
thinking
probably
that. Yeah, that was the phrase in my head.
I've had to do that. I've had to do that, and we've had to do that at the BHF. Is that we actually really believe in this, and we can see that this will work if we try these different processes, almost that are sometimes countercultural. So I think your perceived weirdness index question is, or observation is a great one, because actually, perceived weirdness, you've got to tread a fine line between being familiar enough that people can trust what you say and what you do, but not being so weird that you get rejected. If you're not doing anything weird, you're probably at risk of making no progress at all, because you're not challenging the orthodoxy or the status quo. And I think a lot of when people say, oh, I want to, we need to change culture, or we need to improve our culture, or something like that, it's quite easy to be like, oh, I'll do an audit and then I'll give you some tools and I'll do some presentations that'll tell you how to change your culture. But it's actually really deep systemic work. So in order to do that, you've got to take your time and surface what's important, and you've got to handle discomfort, and you've got to build a shared mindset about what is it you're trying to create or improve on or replace, because you can't do that as one individual. So I think the other thing is, yeah, this thing about relationships in the system and leaders as a network of people who are part of that system rather than individuals who are like, I'm going to force change on that system. That's quite a big thing. That's quite a big thing for me personally, is freedom and a bit of liberty and a bit of playfulness and a bit of messiness. That's the other thing. If the messiness is something that I think we've experienced here at the BHF, which is it can be really hard in an empirically led organization to allow social experimentation and cultural experimentation, because we often want a hypothesis that says, if I do this, I will get that result. And I think a lot of organizations run on the comfort of knowing that they're going to get that thing out of it. And that's been an interesting experience, but a really, really worthwhile one, because I think you get deeper learning and deeper individual and collective shift in what we think leadership is, and what culture is, and what changes. I think we've started to do that. That's a really exciting,
Great.
quite profound, you know.
Yeah.
I think I'm getting really excited. So yeah, I mean, honestly, Claire, I could blather on about this. I don't know if I'm
Do you know
making
what?
any sense.
As you've been talking, there's been like, oh, I'll reply with this. I've got about three strands in my head that I'm like, oh, I could pick up on that and we could have conversations on that, but we probably shouldn't go into it all
Sorry.
today. No, don't. Don't at all. This is exactly what we want. Right. I could talk to you all day, but. It's your last day, so I don't want to keep you
Yeah,
here.
I
Is
better go and finish all my bits and bobs.
there anything else you want to add? Anything that we haven't covered that you'd like to talk about, or are we there?
I think the final thing is the exciting thing for me, and I think this goes back to this the sense of who am I and my background and my identity, is that I really believe in finding difference in the organization as a way of creating opportunities for change, because actually the people that are maybe slightly different from the status quo or the norm can see the organization from a different through a different lens and a different perspective. And I think one of the things that really excites me is finding those different voices sometimes that aren't heard, and finding ways to give that voice space or platform, just because it improves the quality of perspective and quality of dialogue. Not because I think it's right, it adds different dimension and different color, different texture to dialogue in certain spaces where often difference isn't present. So that's something that I'm, in my own sense of what's important to do in whatever I do, I want to make sure that I'm bringing that into the work we do.
Perfect. I'm so excited for you to start with us and get going.
Yes, come on. Loving
Okay,
it. Yeah.
great. Thanks, Ash.
Thank you so much, Claire.
You so much for listening to us today, and we hope to see you next time. Take care. Bye bye.